make the difference, 'cause it can change the world, change the world. A mother's touch can make the difference today.
Believe that? I do. I think so. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. We're going to go ahead and honor our mom. So if you are a mother, would you please stand and remain standing for me, please? Stand to your feet. If you're a mother, look at that, look at that, look at that. Give them a hand, give them a hand. Remain standing for me. Yes, now, everybody else, all the rest of us, yes. All the rest of us, if you've ever had at least one mother, then I want you to stand to your feet as well. And let's honor all of our mothers. So let's all stand together and let's honor all of our mothers. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Mom. Look at you. Look at you. Yes. Okay. Be seated. Mothers are obviously important, right? Obviously. Where would we be without Mom? We're going to talk about that. We're going to be talking about that a little bit. You know, if you're a mother, then what you have imparted into your child greatly determines what your child accomplishes and what your child is able to come over and overcome in the adversities of life. And also, if you have children, then Mom, I want to tell you that what you do and you impart and embed in your child greatly determines what your child will accomplish and all the things they will overcome in their life as well. Moms are very important. Did you know that the first question that a psychologist, or one of the first questions that a psychologist will ask you when they're giving you a psychological exam is, what kind of a relationship did you have with your mother? Now, you know, I'm trying to think about that. Now, moms can drive you crazy sometimes too, can't they? I mean, is that right? Anybody's mother ever kind of drove them a little? Yeah, especially if you're a teenager. They're so precious, but at the same time, there's this other thing that's going on with Mom, right? And so I want to encourage all of you, though, today, to, if your mom is still alive, find some way to get in touch with them and talk to them, honor them in some way. It's been 20 years now since my mother passed away in 93, last April the 15th. So tax day is not a good day for me in a lot of ways, but that's one of the ways. And, you know, and I didn't do as good a job there as I should have done with my mom. I could have done a lot better honoring her and Mother's Day and Christmas and those kinds of things. And she was very proud of me, very proud of me. She would always go, Daddy would always tell us that wherever they went, Mother was always talking about her son, the preacher, you know. And I think back about that, and I wished I had done better. So I don't want you to have that. I don't want you to go through regret about your mom and not getting to honor her as well as you wish that you had, because there are day comes when you won't be able to do that. Now, you know, mother's mother, right? I mean, that's what they are. They mother, and they mother everything and anyone. You know, they'll mother dogs and cats, and they'll mother children, and they'll mother hamsters and snakes and whatever. You know, they mother. That's what mothers do. And one thing that mothers are good about doing is mothering their husbands. And I think us husbands would attest to that, right? Your wife sometimes wants to mother you. There was a women's meeting, and the speaker was speaking on these specific lines of how a woman, a mother, a wife should not mother her husband. And she was going through the list and giving all the negative aspects of what happens when a woman, when a wife mothers her own husband. And she made all of her points, and then she just asked, and she says, now who would want to mother their husband? And this woman sitting in the back raised her hand and said, I would. And it sort of shocked the speaker because she had made all these points, you know, as to why that shouldn't happen. And this woman says, I would. And she had to respond. She says, well, after I've said all of that, you still want to mother your husband? And she said, oh, mother, I thought you said smother. Oh. And I'm sure that sometimes wives want to smother their husband. But mother's mother, and mothers also protect. mothers love to protect their children. There was a woman, and she was in the kitchen with her little daughter. And they were making cookies. They were doing the girly thing. And so once they had made the cookies and they were done, the little girl asked her mom, said, "Can I go out and play with the boys?" And the mother says, "No, they're too rough." And the little girl thought, so, well, if I find a smooth one, can I play with them? Mothers protect, and they mother. Mothers also teach. Mothers teach things that fathers cannot teach. And they protect in a way that fathers cannot protect. And they mother, of course, in a way fathers can't mother. But they also teach. My wife is a great teacher. She taught our children things that I could never teach them. She taught them far more than I ever taught them. And one of the things that Judy taught our children was anticipation. They would mess up. And so she'd blister them. And then she'd say, "Now you wait till your daddy gets home and you're going to get it again." Anticipation. And mothers teach. They're great teachers. But also, you know, mothers are soft and they smell good. But they can be rough. Your mama ever rough with you? Mamas can be rough. There was a police recruit, and he was taking his final exam in the academy before he became an officer. And on the exam was a question that said, "What would you do if you had to arrest your own mother?" And he wrote down, "I'd call for backup." Mothers are rough. And they have to be. They have to be. So as I was preparing, all those thoughts were going through my thought process. As I was praying and preparing, I was actually captivated and captured into a passage of Scripture that I found in Psalms 22. And that's a very strange place to bring a Mother's Day message from. And here's why. In case you don't know what Psalms 22 is, Psalms 22 is called a Messianic Psalm. Now, let me explain to you, for those of us who may not know what that means. A psalm, first of all, is actually a song. It's an ancient song that was sung then and still is sung by the Jewish people. And actually, we also pull some verses from the psalms and the songs that we sing as well. So when you read psalms, you're reading the lyrics to songs. That's what the psalms really are. But this specific one is called a Messianic Psalm. Now, Messiah or Messianic is a Hebrew word for the Greek word Christos or Christ. So this Psalms 22 is a song about Jesus Christ. And this specific one is about the suffering Messiah or Jesus at the time of crucifixion, at the time of his suffering. But what's absolutely amazing about this is that this psalm was written somewhere around 1,000 B.C., 1,000 years before Jesus was born. So it's actually coming into its meaning, and what it really was intended to mean actually was over 1,000 years, over a millennia, before it actually came into what? And it's right in there that I found our Mother's Day message. And so what I want to do is I want to read a couple of the verses to you from that specific psalm, and so we can all get together on the same page as to the meaning of what I want to bring to you today. So let's look at that in Psalms 22 and verse 1, and I want you to tell me who said this and what this is about. So in Psalms 22, 1, it says, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Now, let's stop there. Who said that? Jesus said that? Did he just come up with that all by himself? Or is he quoting from Psalms 22? He's quoting from what David wrote over 1,000 years later. And let me finish reading this specific one. He says, "Why are you so far from saving me? So far from the words of my groaning?" So what's happening here is David is experiencing a living crucifixion, but he's actually speaking about the real crucifixion of Jesus Christ. This is why it's a messianic psalm. It's fascinating. Jesus is saying, he didn't come up with these random words. What Jesus is talking about here is he's saying, that psalm is me. I am that psalm. That psalm is about me. But it's also about David. And David going through his difficulties at the same time. It was written, the Psalms 22, I don't know if I said it or not, but Psalms 22 was written by King David. All right, let me read you a couple of more verses from that psalm. And in verse 6, it says this, "Scorned by men and despised by people," that was Jesus, All who see me mock me. That's exactly what they wrote about him, about Jesus. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. And that's exactly what was said and written about Jesus Christ. It's a messianic song. And then in Psalms 22:18, it says this, they divided my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. That's exactly what happened with Jesus. They actually gambled for his clothing. So it's easy to see that Psalms 22, written over a millennium before it actually took place, was written about the Messiah, the suffering Messiah, but also about something that David himself was going through, a difficult time, a living crucifixion, as it were. Now see, hidden right in the middle of this psalm are all these specific details about what was going to be happening to Jesus Christ, all these thousands of years later. And as we looked at it back, you know, when we proofed the cross, this is one of the points that we made. You see, the crucifixion was not a mistake. The crucifixion was not a fictitious story. The crucifixion was not a failure. What the crucifixion was the plan of God. God's plan for you and God's plan for me over 1,000 years before it ever took place so that you and I could be redeemed. And maybe you're saying, well, that's great, Delbert. That's interesting stuff, but it's not Palm Sunday and it's not Easter Sunday. This is Mother's Day. And that's exactly it. When I saw this specific thing spoken by men who were going through a literal crucifixion but also a living crucifixion, and they were thinking about their mothers, I just had to share about it. So let me show you now what is written in that psalm, right in the middle of that psalm in verses 9 and 10 of that messianic suffering Messiah song. Psalm 22, verse 9 says this, yet you, speaking of God, you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust in you. Now, how do you do that? How do you make somebody trust in God? Well, he gives us a little hint. Even at my mother's breast, from birth, I was cast upon you. You've got to have a little bit of a mental picture. We're talking about a newborn infant being cast or thrown. From birth, I was cast upon you. And from my mother's womb, you have been my God. That's our title. From my mother's womb, you have been my God. There are so many things in here that I want to share. I don't know if I can recall them all, but I'll attempt to. The first thing that I want to point out is what he said here. He says, you made me trust in you. Has your mother ever made you do something? You made me from my mother's breast. You made me do something. And he talks about casting here, this throwing, this baby, this infant. It's kind of a rough deal, right? And mothers can be rough. We've already talked about that. Mothers can be tough. See, in our home, it was never optional if our children went to church. That we didn't vote. And it wasn't only me, it was also her. It was an option. And what I want you to see, moms, is that you have the ability and the potential. There's something about you that's tough enough, but soft enough to make your child trust in the Lord. You have the power, but you have the softness to cause your children to trust in God from birth. From your womb, you have that ability to throw them on the Lord, to cast them onto God, so that from your womb, God will be their God. And another thing that thing says, it says that from a mother's womb, from my mother's womb, you have been my God. I was thinking about that. You see, and here's what I want to try to attempt to relay to you. So I believe I know people who didn't have to go through a sinner's prayer, that from the womb, they had a relationship with God. They didn't have to go through some of the issues of life that I've had to go through, that some of you've had to go through, to come into a relationship with God. But from the mother's womb, they knew God. They had a relationship with God. A sinner's prayer was not required for some people. And I believe that mothers have that potential. If they will take that baby from that womb, wrap that baby in cloth, put that baby on their breast, then they can begin to cast that child upon the Lord, so that that child will trust, is made to trust in God. Moms, you can do that. You can do that. You have that potential. And some of you have done it. I have watched you do it from birth. They didn't have to pray a sinner's prayer. They didn't have to go through all of the stuff. They missed a lot of the messes in life that many of us had to go through because their mother cast the child upon the Lord and made the child trust in God from her womb. Those are just some of the neatest things that I thought. And one of the neatest things is it's mother did this. See, it's what we learn through the excruciating times of life. What mother is capable of embedding into their child, that through those tough times of life, those living crucifixions that we'll all go through, it's what mother is able to embed in us while on her breast, while in her arms, that can get us through difficult times, that can know that God hasn't forsaken us, that there is a presence of God that we can experience even in the most difficult of times, not in the arms of daddy, not in the arms of the father, but at the breast of the mother. Is where this happens. Mom, you have such potential. You have such ability. But also comes with that ability, Spider-Man told us, right? Comes great responsibility. That was a joke. I didn't know. Mothers, you have tremendous ability. But you have a tremendous responsibility. See, it's in those times, it's in those times of excruciating issues of life, and we'll all face them, that we can maintain our sanity. That we can find a way through it and out of it and up. It'll make us better rather than worse. Because of what we learn in our mother's arms, from our mother's wounds, as she cast us upon the Lord, as she made us trust in God. I know you've all heard stories of moms beating their children so they'll go to church. That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. You make your child trust in God. Right? And so as David, as he's writing this and he's going through this depressing, this very deceptive time in his life, when he's going through this excruciating living crucifixion time in his life, and he's at the bottom, and it's also speaking, of course, about Jesus. Jesus says that psalm's about me. That's me in that psalm. And Jesus, of course, was stripped of all of his glory, and he became a man like you and like me. And so he went through these same issues. And so as he's going through the tough time in his life, when an actual literal crucifixion, as he's going through it, somehow, before things ever changed circumstantially, something changed inwardly in them. They went from the depths of depression and the depths of bad things and excruciating times into the heights of praise. Let me show you this in Psalms 22:22. It says this: I will declare your name to my brothers. Now, realize what he's going through. He's going through this very, very difficult, depressing time. When it's really all bad around him. He's being mocked. He's being scorned. He's being rejected. And then he says this: I will declare your name to my brothers in the congregation. I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. How is it that the psalmist, King David, and how is it that Jesus, going through the worst aspects and times of their life, is able to go from the depths of depression to the heights of praise? Why? How's that happen? Again, I think it's mama. Here's why. Mother is able to embed and instill something into children that fathers just can't do. See, mothers do not necessarily teach doctrine and theology. Mothers teach something higher and something better. What mothers teach is a faith. What mothers teach is a living faith. A faith that means something, a real faith. A faith that is living inside. See, when you're going through depressing times and you're going through the living crucifixions of life, when you're going through the excruciating issues of life, when you're dealing with these things, you don't need good doctrine. You don't need good theology. What you need is a faith that's alive, and a faith that will bring you through it. The New Testament tells us about a very young pastor that the Apostle Paul set as a pastor. And his name was Timothy. And Timothy was going through a time of rejection, a time of mocking. And if you've ever been in the ministry, if you've ever been around the ministry, you know what that's like. There's a rejection and there's mocking and there's times of excruciating situations that you have to go through. And the young pastor was going through this and he wasn't dealing with it very well. And the Apostle Paul heard about it. And he wrote this young pastor, Timothy, a letter. And I want to read you an excerpt from that letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to this young Timothy. And he says here, I have been reminded of the sincere theology. What does it say? Sincere faith. How deep you are in theology, Timothy. Not how much Bible you know. But I'm reminded about your sincere faith. Your faith that's not normal faith. It's a sincere faith. It's something that's alive because which first lived in, it was alive in, your grandmother. Isn't that cool? It was alive in your grandmother and it was also alive in your mother, Eunice. Now I'm persuaded that living faith is also alive in you. Isn't that neat? That's just amazing. See, it wasn't the theology that young Timothy needed. What he needed was this sincere faith. What mothers are capable of doing and have the ability to do, given to them by God, is to put and implant and embed into their children something more. See, in our home, the faith that I taught, the faith that I was able to share with our children was a doctrinal faith, a theological faith. This is what God said do, this is what we're going to do. But the faith that she was able to embed and instill into our children was a faith that was based on love. The love of God and God's love for us. A faith that is built on trust, our trust for God, God trusting in us. And a faith that was built on righteousness. Being right, doing right, and knowing that God is going to bless you. See, when you're going through the depraved times of life, when you're going through the times of rejection and mocking in life, when you're going through the excruciating times of life, you don't need theology. You need a sincere faith. And how you get that is because from your mother's womb. Because your mother, from your grandmother's womb, had a sincere faith because they were taken and they were cast upon the Lord and they were made to trust in God. Young Timothy, you can make it. You can get through it now, not because of your theology, but because of your sincere faith. And it's amazing to me as I see all this happening and unfolding in this psalm and seeing how it's speaking of a living crucifixion that King David was going through, but also a literal crucifixion that King Jesus was going through. It's fascinating. You see, Jesus, the people that Jesus came to save, they rejected him. They took him, and as that psalm writes in Psalm 22, it says, they pierced me in my hands and my feet. Again, it's speaking of the suffering Messiah. Jesus was pierced in his hands and his feet as he hung on the cross. And he looked around. And as he looked around, he saw evil people mocking him, waggling their heads. Oh, if you're so who you say you are, if you're of God, if you're the Son of God, well, come on down. If you're who you say you are, then he will save you. Let him save you. If you're who you say you are, they mocked him. They rejected him. They humiliated him, hanging on the cross, which is, of course, what the cross was supposed to be. But as Jesus also hung there and he looked around, he saw something more and he saw something higher. He looked out and he saw his mother. I want to read to you what it says of Jesus as he looked out in this suffering position. As he looked out and he saw his mother. It's in John chapter 19, verse 26. It says, when Jesus saw his mother there. Well, why shouldn't he see his mother there? When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, dear woman. This always fascinated me. Dear woman. "Dear woman, here is your son." Now, he's not speaking about himself hanging on the cross. He's actually speaking about John, the disciple, the apostle, standing right there. Also, he said, "Here is your son," speaking about John to the disciple. "Here is your mother," he said to John, speaking about Mary. And from that time on, this disciple, who was John, took her into his home. And what Jesus was doing was providing, making provisions, great provisions for his mother. It wasn't because there wasn't anybody to take care of her after he died. Jesus had several brothers and several sisters who would provide and take her into their home, but that's not what Jesus wanted. Jesus wanted a believer to take care of his mother. He wanted John to take care of his mother. And besides, his brothers weren't there. But here's a thought that I want to make sure that I say. He says, "Dear mother, dear woman." And what I want to try to project to you is, "Dear woman," he says, I want us to try to understand that Mary had become more than mother to Jesus. I want you to hear that rather than "dear woman," "precious woman." See, what a godly mother does, a woman that takes her children and casts them upon the Lord from the womb and who makes them trust in God. What that kind of a woman becomes is something precious. Precious to Jesus and precious to us. Isn't that what our mother becomes? Isn't there a time when your mother becomes more than mother? She'll always be mother, but mother becomes more than mother. Mother becomes something precious, more precious and a different kind of precious than anyone or anything else. Precious. It's a precious woman. And it seemed as though she was there. Why wouldn't she be there? Well, there's some thoughts here that I want to project to us and let us see. See, as we learned when we were doing the proof of the cross, we were seeing that a crucifixion was more than just murdering or killing somebody. It was more than an execution. There was a lot of way of executing people. The cross, first intention is to humiliate. It was the worst humiliation that a person could go through. They hung there naked. They hung there for hours, having insults hurled at them. It was a time of humiliation. But it wasn't only a humiliation for the person being crucified. It was also a humiliation for the entire family. Jesus had become a humiliation for his entire family. No brothers were there. He had several. No sisters were there. He had several. You can read it in Matthew chapter 13, verse 55. If you want to study his siblings. They weren't there. But Mama was there. You see, there's nothing that a person can do that'll turn mother away. Not a godly mother. There's nothing that you or I can do that won't cause our mothers to be there to the very end and to love us. Nothing we can do. Mama's there. Mama's there to the end. 33 years prior to this particular moment, Mary watched her son born from her own womb. And she was crying great tears of joy. She took him, and the Bible says she wrapped him in swaddling cloths. And she took him and she put him to her breast, and she began casting him upon God. 33 years later, she's not in a smelly stable. She's smelling the wretched stench of a crucifixion. There are no tears of joy, just great tears of sorrow and a broken heart as this mother not watched her son being birthed, watched her son awaiting death. In a few moments, they would take him down. And once again, she would go and she'd wrap him in cloth. She would hold him to her breast. And she would cast him upon God. As I was preparing that, I couldn't help but think of some of the mothers that are right here in our congregation. Thought about Jewel Canada. Thought of Eveline Teams. See, they they have to see Mother's Day not as most mothers get to see it, because, see, it's not the way it's supposed to be. Mother isn't supposed to watch her child die. Mother is supposed to go first. But some women in our own congregation had to see Mother's Day through Mary's eyes. Had to see Mother's Day in a different way. They had to watch the child that they birthed and having great tears of joy, taking, wrapping cloth and holding, beginning to tell them about the stories about God and Jesus. They had to watch their child die. And as it were, they had to go and wrap the child in cloth and cast again the child upon God. I want to try to say something here as best I can, if God will give me grace to do it. Because you see, I want to say to them, dear woman, precious woman, you love them to the end. You love them as far as you can love them. And though you may not have been there at the very moment that they passed, I want to tell you, you were one of the last thoughts they had. So I was thinking about that. See, Jesus, one of his last thoughts, obviously, is his mother. David, going through a time of living crucifixion, obviously, right in the middle of that is his mother, the thought of his mother. Remembering, Mama was there. Dear woman, precious woman, as a mother, will be there with you until the end. And I want those women and any woman that hears this or sees this and who has ever experienced that, I want you to know, one of the last thoughts they had, because you had embedded into their memories, you had embedded into their being, into their souls, and into their hearts, God. You made them trust in God. You had cast them upon the Lord. You're a precious woman. You were more than mother. You were there with them to the end. So if you're a young woman and not yet a mother, I want you to know that one of the greatest powers and ability that God has given to you is the ability to take your child from your womb, wrap your child, put your child at your breast, and begin to cast that child upon the Lord and make that child trust in God. You can do it. And if you're a mother who has children, then continue to cast your children upon the Lord. Make your children trust in God. Continue to always propose them before the Lord and cast them to the Lord and make them trust in the Lord. See, God has given you special abilities, amazing talents. You're a mother. Nobody can mother your children like you. You protect. Nobody can protect your children like you. You can teach. Nobody can teach your children like you. But you're tough. And nobody can be tough on your children but you. You're soft. You smell good. You have a sweet voice. Moms, you need to cast your children upon the Lord. You need to make them trust in God. And if you will, then what you're going to have in your life is children who are able to say, from my mother's womb, God has been my God. I want to pray for you. I want to tell you Happy Mother's Day. I want to tell you one more time, the greatest thing that you can do is cast your children upon God. Let's pray. Father, thank you.